Well, some say bees provide for one-third of the food we eat. Others say one-third of our bee colonies are collapsing. Albert Einstein is said to have said, if the bee disappears from the surface of the earth, man would have no more than 4 years to live. All this talk about bees leads us to ask, could what is happening to bees happen to us?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned in to the 732nd edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friend over there in the Beaujolais who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. This morning, broadcasting live from the Monterey Bay Certified Farmers Markets in Aptos, California. I am in heaven. Also with us today, we have engineer Nikki James, our own Miss Idaho. Hello, Nikki.
Hello. How are we doing out there?
We're doing great. It's an absolutely beautiful morning out here.
Perfect.
Folks, that honeybee buzzing about our garden plays a much bigger role in our lives than its tiny little body might suggest. In fact, the honeybee, whose real name is Apis mellifera, is responsible for pollinating crops that produce approximately one-third of the food we eat. Given that honeybees provide for so much of our food, it would seem intelligent of us to be listening to what honeybees have to say about our world. And what honeybees are saying these days is something is wrong, frightfully wrong. During each of the past 5 years, over one-third of the bee colonies in the United States, Canada, and Europe have simply collapsed. For one reason or another, or perhaps for a whole bundle of reasons, the bees in these colonies simply fly away from their colonies to never return, and thus the entire colony collapses. The fact that so many honeybee colonies are collapsing every year, and that so much of our food is dependent upon the work of these honeybees, it leads us to ask, could what is happening to the bees happen to us? Here to help us listen to the buzzing of the bees, today we have Lynn Batasso, the opera-singing honeybee lady of Amen Bee Products in San Martin, California. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning, Michael.
Good to have you back. It's been almost 600 Saturdays since we last worked together.
You actually counted them?
You know, Lynn, there's two kinds of beekeepers in the world. The beekeeping, like all other industries, seems to be headed in two directions, very, very big and very, very small. And, of course, folks, since we're broadcasting from the Monterey Bay Certified Farmers Markets, you can kind of guess who we're talking to today. I guess you don't have 40,000 hives of bees to chase across the...
No, I don't have 40,000. I have about 800.
800.
But that's a lot to handle.
That's a lot.
For an old lady.
For an opera singing honeybee lady from San Martin, handling 800 hives of bees is a lot of work.
Yeah, I do have help. I don't do it by myself.
Well, I guess you would. But so tell us a little bit about how you got involved in the keeping of bees.
Well, actually, when I lived in Italy, I would go to the farmer's market, and there was a beekeeper selling their products at the market, and I noticed that a lot of the people who were purchasing royal jelly and pollen rather than
not,
the honey.
Not just honey, then.
And they were all older gentlemen, mm-hmm. And I asked, well, why, you know, to the lady, I said, why are they purchasing this stuff and not the honey? She said, because it stimulates their cells to remain young and healthy and vibrant. So I decided, that's something I needed to get. And when singing, you can't really eat before a performance because it hampers your diaphragm.
Right.
So you need something that's nutritious, and the protein and the aminos and the B vitamins and the pollen are quickly and absorbed, and the honey is a great carrier. The royal jelly stimulates your pantothenic acid, so that gives you healthy cell production. So it's all an energy boost. And I was able to go through a complete opera without having to eat. And afterwards, I wasn't starving, because most of the time, even Mr. Pavarotti, would go after performance and eat these humongous meals. Now,
so,
this would
so
be
that's
like,
how you stayed slim as an opera singer.
Yeah, yeah, sure. But, you know, you fill up with all this stuff and then you go to bed and it's just totally not healthy. And that was a great solution.
And that's how opera singers get fat.
That is how opera singers get fat.
I was wondering about that because they always seem to be so big.
Well, you know, you're breathing and all of this, you're taking in a lot of oxygen, and so therefore it creates an appetite. And then there's a nervous energy behind that as well.
So you're, you know, in the scheme of things within the beekeeping industry, you're one of the smaller operators. 800 hives is
definitely
a lot.
Definitely. I'm getting smaller.
That's a big load. But in the scheme of things, it's actually quite small. So what is Amen Bee Products, and how do you make your living?
Well, actually, my partner gets the monies from the pollination, and I get the products.
Okay.
So he does what I don't like to do or have done, and that is load up the trucks with the bees, drive them at night, unload them into the orchards, and, you know, basically that's it. Mm-hmm. Because if we had to rely on the honey alone, it would be almost impossible to make a living, because honey coming in from Argentina and China is coming in at very low prices. Some of the honey from China is coming in at 18 cents a pound. I mean, with gas the price it is, how could we even survive?
Right.
So that first pollination brings you in a lot of money, and it brings you a lot of heartache.
Right. So that's your job. Why is it what heartache?
The first crop that we go to are almonds, and the almonds are now a monocrop. You have hundreds and hundreds of acres of almonds. There are no flowers and grasses growing underneath. So basically what the bees do is just go to the almonds.
Right. Nothing else.
And these trees have been treated with systemic sprays that last in the tree, go up through the root system, into the tree, the leaves and the flowers. The bees gather the pollen and the nectar. This remains in the hive because they'll stuff the pollen into the cells and keep it for a later date. They don't need it right then. And
so the systemic pesticides go through the trees, into the pollen, into the bees, into the beehives.
Correct. And stay there for a while.
Wow.
Because we don't extract the almond honey, we don't collect the almond pollen, it's really bitter. But the bad thing about this, and what we're found, and maybe I'm jumping ahead of schedule here.
No, there's no schedule.
Okay. The bad thing is that when the bees consume that pollen, within maybe 3 or 4 months, it gives them the colony collapse.
Okay.
It puts them into colony collapse.
So that takes.
So you don't see it right away. It's not like a pesticide that kills them and you can see tons and tons of bees on the ground dead. No, you don't see that.
So that's the cause of them flying away
and so,
losing.
You know, they lose, first of all, it hits their digestive system, then it hits their nervous system, then their navigation system, and then their brain.
And then they're gone.
Yeah. Now, the French call this, you know, Alzheimer's. The bees have Alzheimer's.
Because that's what they're acting like.
Yeah,
then.
That's what they're acting like. So if you want to compare it to humans, could that be why we have more Alzheimer's?
Wow. Because we're doing the same things to ourselves.
Exactly.
As we are to the bees. How are you doing things different? This isn't the Amen Bee Products that I know about. This is something.
Exactly. First of all, we're heading to wherever we can find organic locations. We're working with the farmers to say, okay, let's try another method. Then we started using essential oils, but now I'm not using them at all.
That's for varroa mites?
That was for that, you know, the intestinal disorder they got because of the varroa. It also deters the varroa from entering the hive or entering the cells, the little on the baby bees.
Mm-hmm.
But we find now that the essential oils kind of bother their sense of smell. So, you know,
so it's
you
almost
do
like
one thing.
Anything we do upsets something else down the road.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. Our good intentions.
And, you know.
We have lots of good intentions, don't we?
We try really hard.
We try really hard.
And maybe that's the problem. We just try too hard.
I guess so. So, Amen Bee products, what do you sell if you don't sell the pollination?
What do I sell? Well, here at market and in stores, my collection of bee pollen is from grasses and trees.
You're gonna
not
have to pick
fruit.
This up. We have to take a quick break here.
Oh, okay.
So pick this up on the other side. What is the Amen Bee products? Folks, this is the Food Chain, Michael Olson. Today we're broadcasting live from the Monterey Bay Certified Farmers Markets, Aptos, California, with Lynn Batazzo, owner of Amen Bee Products, opera singing honeybee lady from San Martin, California. Bees, listen. Be listening. Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here. Today we're broadcasting live from the Certified Farmers Markets in the Monterey Bay Area. Certified means that the people who sell the food are the people who grew the food. So you're talking directly with the people who actually are involved in the production of food. And one of the people we're talking to today is Lynn Batazzo of Amen Bee Products of San Martin, California. And Lynn is the honeybee lady. I've been eating Lynn's honey for almost 20 years.
Gosh.
Maybe that's why I'm so young and vigorous.
That's
it. But long time. So what is the difference? Let's talk about the difference between your kind of honey, the honey of the small producer, and the honey of the industrial producers. You know, we're bringing in a lot of honey now from China. Help me get a handle on the difference between what Amen Bee Products honey and that other honey, Lynn.
Well, first of all, I do not feed corn syrup or sugar, because my thought on that is it's
to
not...
To the bees.
Yeah, correct. My thought on that is if it's not good for humans, it's not going to be good for the bees, and it isn't. It takes away from them, as it does for us. I also, when moving bees, I make sure that they have enough honey on their hives, in their hives, so that I don't have to pump syrup into them. And commercial beekeepers will remove the honey and fill their hive up with the liquid sugar or corn syrup,
which has no nutritional value at all.
It's a deterrent, actually. You know, they feel it'll keep them alive, which it does, but it lowers their immune system.
So how was China able to ship honey into the United States for pennies on a pound? What are they doing?
Well, first of all, if we didn't buy it, they wouldn't sell it, right?
Right.
Okay, number one.
We buy it.
We
it's
buy
cheap
it.
Honey.
We buy it. And it's the bakeries and whoever.
Okay.
Okay, this honey comes in and it has lactose syrup in it. 45% of it is honey and the rest is lactose syrup or corn syrup.
Milk syrup.
It's a milk
byproduct.
That's what
I thought, yeah.
Yeah. Can you believe that?
Okay, I'm shaking my head.
So you thought 18 cents a pound for lactose syrup.
So it's almost half lactose syrup. So.
Yeah. Well, first of all, this producer was sending over stuff that he would get basically from sewer ponds. He'd spray the top of the sewer ponds with sugar syrup, and the bees would go there and feed on it.
Are you talking about sewer ponds?
Yeah, sewer ponds.
Oh, my God. All right.
Yeah, and then they would give them really heavy doses of antibiotics so that...
they wouldn't die from sewer, okay.
Yeah.
So this is Chinese honey,
yeah.
Folks, we're talking about. This is the cheap honey you can buy down at the box store or from your baked goods, from the cheap baked goods. So,
and your cereals.
So in the cereals. And so when they say honey added, chances are that's where it's coming from, right?
Correct.
Boy, that's frightening stuff. So I guess that's why they can sell cheap honey. And but why do we buy... Never mind.
What?
Why do we buy cheap honey?
I don't know. I asked one time. I was in a health food store, and I saw a producer, a maker of granola, and I said, you know, I'd really like you to use my honey in your product. She said, you wouldn't be able to produce enough of the same quality and the same taste that I'm getting. And I didn't have words for her except, do you buy it from China?
Yeah.
And she said, yes. From that moment on, I will not use that granola. I'll make my own.
Make your own. Yeah, there you go, folks. So when you find cheap food, chances are there's a good reason that food is cheap. So let's get back to talking about what on earth is happening to our bees. They say that over the past 5 years, there's been approximately one-third of the bee colonies in the collapsing in the United States, Canada, and Europe. This is compared to, I think it was like 12% before. So there's just been a huge increase in the number of lost colonies of bees. On the East Coast, that number is 70%. Folks, we're losing 70% of our bees on the East Coast.
Can you imagine that?
70% on the West Coast.
If you were a dairy farmer and you lost 70% of your cows.
Yeah. 60% here on the West Coast. So let's talk about this colony collapse. Lynn, what exactly is it?
Well, like I mentioned before, it's basically the scientists have found, and these are scientists that have been hired by beekeepers back east, and I think it comes from Penn State University,
mm-hmm.
that getting into the systemic sprays, the gaucho and whatever, this causes the bees, like I said, to eat the pollen that's contaminated. And then after 3 months of having had it, they die.
So with respect to systemic means a pesticide that is applied into the ground,
in
the water, so that the plant takes the pesticide up and it becomes infused in the plant's cells and all of the plant's cells.
Basically, it works the same way as the flea things, like what is that called?
Yeah, the flea system for dogs.
For dogs and cats.
So it works from the inside out.
The nicotinoids.
Yeah. So then almost everything that that consumes any part of that plant is consuming the pesticide.
Correct.
And of course, as we use these bees to pollinate these vast tracts of almonds, industrial scale almonds, and then that's what they have in their hive.
Yeah, like these fellows from back east, I think it was Hackenberg, I think that I'm pronouncing his name correctly, David Hackenberg, he came over, pollinated, went back home. Bees were fine when he got home. In 3 hours, one hive was gone. In 3 days, he lost 4,000.
4,000 hives?
Yeah.
Just gone.
That's, I mean, his livelihood.
Now, with respect to where do the bees go? Now, you told the story about somebody who's actually went looking for them and was crawling around on their hands and knees.
Yeah, actually, David told me that, and they can't find them. See, if it were a normal pesticide that was a spray,
right,
you'll find them.
Yeah, they'd croak.
They'd die either in the hive or outside the hive, but with this, they don't. And then, you know, that's not the only problem. We have urban changes. Mm-hmm. You know, there's more dwellings.
Have you ever experienced collapse here?
Yes.
What was it like for you?
Devastating. That's when I started doing research and finding what school was doing research on at Penn State and then a university in the Carolinas, a Dr. James Amrine. And he suggested that I use the herbal solution of lemongrass and spearmint oil. And it worked, you know, for the problem they had at the time, because the systemic and the varroa caused an intestinal problem on the bees. So this kind of helped them with their stomach, but on the same time, it ruined their senses.
Wow. And the senses, it seems to be what's really on whack, because if there was just a straight poison, the bees would just fall over and die, and you'd see them laying at the mouth of the hive.
Correct.
But they're not. They're gone. So earlier you were talking about how the French say it's like Alzheimer's.
Uh-huh.
They just wander off and forget where they're at.
Exactly.
Wow. What about other things that we're suffering here? We had the varroa mite last time we talked about the varroa mite.
The varroa mite has been a problem for a long time. I saw it maybe 30 years ago in Italy. But, you know, they're using a lot of chemicals to treat it. And I think in using these chemicals, what they're doing is lowering the immune system of bees.
And that takes us back to where we're at here. Folks, a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about the colony collapse disorder. What's happening to our bees? And can what's happening to our bees happen to us? This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson with Lynn Bataza. We will be right back. Please do stay tuned. Well, folks, Albert Einstein has said to have said, if the bee disappears from the surface of the earth, man would have no more than 4 years to live. Well, folks, the bees are disappearing from the surface of this earth. At least our bees are. 70% of the bees on the East Coast are disappearing every year. 70%. 60% here on the West Coast. Where are they going? Nobody seems to know. Because they just wander off. Fly away as if they have Alzheimer's, gone. And so today we're trying to figure out what the heck is going on with our bees, because we want to know if what is happening to the bees could happen to us. Here today with us we have Lynn Bataza, the opera singing honeybee lady from San Martin, proprietor of Amen Bee Products. Lynn, we're talking a little bit about some of the things that we're putting our bees through. The UC University of California, San Francisco just came out this week with a study that said the bees are currently being attacked by 30 viruses, four of which have never been seen before. We're transporting these bees thousands of miles. We're sticking them in trucks and driving them all over the place. We're bringing in bees from Australia.
Oh, yeah.
We're flying in bees from Australia. We're putting those bees out into polluted air. We're feeding them pesticides. I even saw a study that suggests that cell phone radiation is having an impact on the bees. So there's all kinds of these things. What is it doing to our bees? Do you talk to your bees? Do you listen to them?
Oh, yeah, I do.
What are they telling you?
They tell me to go with my instinct. And my instinct at this time is to create sanctuaries for bees.
Sanctuaries for bees?
Yes.
That sounds like my backyard.
Yeah, it could be everybody's backyard. But if we have a place where they're not harmed, where they don't have to be moved, which is every beekeeper's dream, is to be able to have enough, you know, pollen and nectar for them to exist all year round. I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Be great.
That would be great, so to speak.
Be great, yeah.
So how do you know when things are wrong when you're talking to your bees?
First of all, smells.
Smells?
Mm-hmm. You can smell the hive. You can look at them, how they enter and exit.
What does trouble smell like in a beehive?
stinks.
It stinks.
Yeah.
Just kind of a...
Foul brood really smells bad.
Foul brood, there's the word, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
So when you can smell trouble coming.
Correct. Huh. Yeah, you can smell trouble from it. You know, and another thing, too, is we have medicated and over-medicated the bees. I mean, there's Apistan, there's formic acid. Can you imagine formic acid in your hive?
No.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it in my house. I can't imagine it in a hive. So, essentially...
Fumigation.
So, we're drugging the bees into...
Yeah, yeah. You fumigate the combs when they're... After they've been, the honey's been extracted. It's just one thing after another.
You talked a lot about how the industrial beekeepers are now buying hives that are manufactured in China.
Correct. I'm to blame for that too.
Right?
I actually ordered some. I wanted the wax, you know, that goes in between the frame, and he's. I said, why, you know, is it so expensive? Oh, he said, it's really nice. You'll like them. And here comes these big boxes of frames with the wax already attached in it. The wax didn't smell like normal beeswax. The cells were a little bit bigger. And I said, oh, the heck with this. You know, I'm not going to use them.
So they came from all
but
the way
see,
from China?
But see, I can, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of stuff does.
A lot of stuff, a lot of bee stuff does.
Yes, I mean, even little patties made with pollen and corn syrup and whatever, medications, and them come from China.
So the bee drugs and bee foods and...
A lot of them. I'm not saying all of them, but a mm-hmm. lot of them are. And, you know, when you're out there as a commercial beekeeper, and you can't really blame them, I mean, you want your hive to look great when you go into pollination or you're not going to get paid.
Right.
So you're going to do anything and everything you can to keep them looking great, producing.
Right, right.
So, because you know, you're going to want to get rid of the varroa, you're going to the noxzema and all the rest of it. You want to get rid of it. And so you're going to use whatever you can. But
what happens to the bees?
Exactly.
Sure.
And what happens to your products?
So there it is. And then
you know, it goes round and round.
So we keep pouring everything on. We keep pouring everything on. And pretty soon the bees find themselves in trouble and unable to find their way back to the hive.
Yeah.
And that's the essential core of what the problem is. Then
there's a lot of things, Michael. I mean, we do a lot of artificial insemination of queens. And this basically started out to control the Africanized
right.
population.
Wow.
Because if you requeen, you know, you're going to keep that variety of bee going,
so
that breeding.
Gene, yeah.
Yeah, that gene pool. But what it does is it reduces the gene pool.
Sure. So you're essentially inbreeding then.
Yeah.
Right? You're inbreeding
exactly.
the bees.
Exactly.
And you're losing that. Genetic diversity?
Correct. Correct. I mean, we fiddle-faddle with nature and we just get it in the butt.
And so that's, boy, you know, giving all of these pressures, it's amazing that all the bees just don't get up and fly away. 70%, I guess, is pretty darn close to it. But 70% is, do you think what is happening to the bees can happen to us? Are we not doing the same thing to our... To us that we're doing...
You mean that we're inbred?
Yeah. Well, not so much inbred, but we're doing all of these other things to ourselves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, whenever
we're eating the same Chinese food we're feeding our bees.
Not me.
Not me either.
I go to the farmer's market.
Yeah, amen. but in general, you know, we're... You know, think about what the beekeepers are feeding the bees off-season. They're feeding them what? Sugar water.
Yeah, sugar syrup.
So what are we feeding ourselves? We're feeding ourselves, you know, simple carbohydrates with very little nutrients in them, and we get really big and really fat, but we're starved for nutrients.
That's it. That's it. And that's when, you know, Steiner said a long time ago, I think
Rudolf
was,
Steiner.
Yeah, I love it. I've just got into biological in the last 3 years, and hopefully the whole ranch will be an oasis of biological gardening.
Wow, biointensive, yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us about Rudolf Steiner. What did he say?
Well, he said that bees wouldn't make it in the next 100 years.
that what he said?
Mm-hmm.
Because of all of the things that we're doing.
That's correct.
Well, if bees aren't going to make it, can we?
If
Einstein was saying, you know, if the bee disappears, we got 4 years left.
What we need to do is beekeepers and farmers need to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to come to a happy conclusion, a happy system of doing things for both, the betterment of both. I mean, the farmer needs to exist, the beekeeper needs to exist, so why not work together?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about when we come back from this break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Lynn Matazzo, the opera-singing honeybee lady from San Martin, California, proprietor of Amen Bee Products. Today we're broadcasting live from the Monterey Bay Area Certified Farmers Markets in Aptos, California. And, of course, you can imagine what kind of beekeeper Lynn is if she's hanging around selling her foods, her honey products at the farmers markets, and that's what we're talking about today. We will be right back. Please do stay tuned.
Think about too much.
Hey, welcome back. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Today we're talking about one of the most ancient foods and one of the most pure foods of all kind. And we're talking about honey, the honeybee, and the foods that they bring. One third of the food we eat, is that true, Lynn Matazzo? One third of the food we eat comes from the pollination of bees and other pollinators?
Exactly. If we didn't have the bees to pollinate, we'd probably be on oats and grains.
There you are. And beer, we'd be back to basically
beer
and bread. Yeah, back to where it all started. We're going to go to some phone callers right now. Nikki James, we got some callers coming in?
Yes, we do. And we've got Jim calling from Seaside with a question. Here's Jim.
Welcome, Jim.
Yeah, hi. Are you there?
We got you. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, we have you, Jim. Go ahead. Can you hear us? Nikki, you have to
Anybody
work with
there?
Him.
Jim's not going to be able to hear you, so hopefully he'll just ask the question.
Go ahead.
Oh. Okay. Anyway, systemic pesticides that seem to be damaging our honeybees, does that include BT, Bacillus thuringiensis?
Well, that's an interesting question. Does Bacillus thuringiensis, which is an organic pesticide, hurt bees?
That I don't know.
Okay.
That I don't know. What do you know about it, Jim?
I don't think Jim can hear us, but tell Jim thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Don't know the answer to that question, Jim. Nikki, do we have another caller?
Yes, we do. We got two more. We got Millie calling from Aptos, and I will put them on hold so they can hear the answer.
That's a good idea.
How about that?
Good
okay,
idea.
Cool.
Right.
Here is Millie.
All right, Millie, hello. Welcome.
My first question is, what plants will be good to feed bees that may happen upon my deck?
Oh, wonderful question. What about bee attractants?
Okay. Are you there, Millie?
She's on hold right now,
okay.
So she can hear us.
All right. Lavender is excellent. The mint family, cat mint, for example. I have probably 500 square feet of cat mint, and I love to go out there and listen to the bees hum on it. I've planted robinia trees, which is a type of acacia. I've got echinaceas going. Anything that flowers and you see bees on, jasmine doesn't seem to work as well. They do work some of my antique roses. Anything.
Fruit trees. Fruit trees.
Yeah, fruit trees are great, especially if you don't use pesticides on them.
Okay, thank you, Millie. Great question. We love to, I think what my wife Marlene does is she plant bee attractants. And that's
yeah, exactly.
So we have a veritable bee paradise in our backyard. Do we have another phone call?
Yes,
maker?
We have two more. We got Linda calling from Ben Lomond, and here is Linda.
All right, Linda. Linda, welcome.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Okay, I hear something else, but I'll talk to you anyway. We're brand new beekeepers, and recently... I had heard from another beekeeper that if you plant oregano near your hive, they will not get the Marlboro mite. Have you heard that?
No, I haven't, but I do have a lot of oregano in my my garden and in my on my farm. Any of the herbals are good. One thing I want to tell you that I've just started is to, and it by chance, I don't use comb anymore. This is for not for my commercial end, but for my testing.
You don't use what?
Comb.
Comb.
Okay. Yeah. What did you think I did?
I don't know. Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm letting the bees make their own. I'm trying to get back as close as I can to nature with them. So in making their own, it has the right size for them. Having the right size, the varroa mite won't fit in the cell with the larva. And so far, it looks really good.
So, essentially, we're trying to remove as much of our presence.
Correct.
As possible.
That's right. And I've got like about 6 locations that I call test locations. Mm-hmm. Some are totally free of pesticides, and others have pesticidal plants in the area. I'm seeing that if I don't fiddle with them, and go in there and work them like, you know, I used to do, get finished and continue around and go back and check them out again. They're doing much better.
Interesting. Nikki, another caller?
Yes, we have Jason calling from Monterey. And Jason, you're on the air.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My wife and I are local beekeepers. We own Spring Canyon Ranch and Apiaries. I just wanted to first and call and tell everybody thank you for supporting bees. It's really good. And second of all, I just want to also thank farmers. We took 28 into the almonds and not haven't lost one hive. We're doing 85 in onion pollination, and everything seems to be good there. So I think there is some pesticide issues, but overall, I think the farmers do a great job with me. They have something called Bee Friendly Farmers. It's an initiative that was a couple
Bee
years
friendly
ago.
Bee Friendly Farmers?
Also
mm-hmm.
seems to be working well.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break, but I love the idea of bee-friendly farmers.
Yes, we're connected with some of those.
Really? So a bee-friendly farmer would be the kind of farmer I would like to buy food from.
Yes.
Because if they're friendly to bees, they're going to be friendly to me. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're broadcasting live from the Monterey Bay Certified Farmers Markets. Today we're talking bees with the opera-singing honeybee lady of San Martin, California, the Amen Bee Products, Lynn Batazzo, and you. Our phone numbers are 479-1080. We don't have much time left, but we do have a few minutes, so if you want to jump in, jump in. We will be right back after these messages, and I'd like to ask Lynn, you know, what we can all do to make a better world for our bees to live in, and thus a better world for us as well. We will be right back. Thank you. Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. A few minutes left. So much to talk about, and to talk about bees. We're hoping you're bee listening today with Lynn Batazzo, the opera singing honeybee lady from San Martin. With us, we have a caller coming in, right, Ms.
Yeah,
Nikki?
We've got Maria from Roseville, and Maria, you are on the air.
Yes, I just want to thank Lynn for distributing her honey. We have it here in Roseville. I purchased it at Whole Foods, and let me tell you, it's fabulous. I have it every morning on my toast and also in my coffee. So thanks a lot, Lynn.
Well, wait a minute. What's your favorite honey? Did she pick that up?
Hold on. Now she's on hold. You can ask her
okay,
now.
Okay. What is your favorite honey?
I just like the plain honey. She also has, I just buy the plain. I love it.
Okay, good. Thank you very much for the call.
When you put it on your toast, it's smooth. You can just taste the flavors. And I'm sorry, but I used to be one of those people that used to buy it in the little, you know, China thing, and you can absolutely fabulously taste the difference. It's also good when you bake with your muffins.
Thank you very much for that call. Well, how many different flavors of honey do you have?
I have 10.
10 different flavors of honey.
I'm trying to catch up to my relatives in Italy who have 140, but I think that...
140 different flavors?
I know.
Now, do you put flavoring in the honey to get the flavoring?
Come on, Michael.
You don't, do you? How do you do it? How do you get, the flavoring in the honey?
I don't. The bees do it. And you bring them to a location that's most prominent with that nectar, and then you've got the honey if you're lucky.
Like blueberry honey.
Correct.
It tastes like blueberries.
Yeah.
With no blueberry flavoring in it.
Exactly.
It's the real blueberries from the real blueberry pollen. How can we, what can we do to our world to make it more friendly for the bees and thus make it more friendly for us?
Get active. Get active. Get out there and go and learn about what's going on with pesticides, with everything that's going on that we eat.
There you go.
I mean, because you got to remember, too, that these pesticides don't only remain in the trees and whatever. They go into the ground, kill the worms, the beneficial insects, and then go into the water supply. We've got places in the United States where you can't even drink the water. It's poisonous. And even in my little community of Morgan Hill, central east side of the valley from Morgan Hill down to Leavesley and Gilroy, we have perchlorate.
Which is rocket fuel.
Yep.
The component of rocket fuel.
So it's, you know, it's, so there you go. So keep your eyes open. Get out there and talk.
You know, and another thing is not only get involved, but you can always control the world by what you buy.
Exactly.
So if we're running out there and buying that China from honey, or honey from China, well, buying honey is from China, never mind. But if we're buying that cheap food, we're perpetuating that cheap food.
Everything, Michael, anything we buy that comes from a country that's contaminated is, you know, we're just reinforcing them.
So the cheap food isn't?
Cheap food isn't good food. You are what you eat.
There you go. Lynn Battazzo, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in out there. This has been some What's Eating What Radio on the Food Chain. Tune in next week for more. And please do remember that to go out and buy some food with its farmer's face on it and really live. Thank you very much.
Listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.